This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Just kidding, listeners. If you want to hear all of that, you're going to have to wait all the way to the end. Welcome, everyone, to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Christopher D. Littlefield, and with me this week is Brandi Jackala and Liam Smart. Hey, you two.
Hey.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine.
We'll pretend I'm fine.
Yes, listeners, Brandi is not feeling well right now, but she's here anyway, and we are so thankful that she is.
I'm so happy that you're still letting me do this.
I'm happy that you decided to still do it. And I'm so glad that both of you are here at the same time.
Yay, all three of us together. Yay! For the first time.
I'm so excited.
On a podcast.
That's never happened.
We've had a little messenger chat for a while, but I've never spoken to both of you at the same time in person. I'm excited. Very excited. This will probably record for like 8 hours, knowing us.
Uh-huh. Yep, you'll have to whittle it down to an hour from 8 hours.
Yeah. We may go off the rails a little bit, listeners, so just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
We will.
I've never been on the rails.
That's fair.
You know what? None of us have.
No, rails are for losers.
I've sent you some of the bits from the Edge recordings.
Yes. Yeah, this is going to be fun.
We can't repeat.
Yeah.
Today we are here to discuss the fan response to the penultimate episode of Picard Season 1, Et in Arcadia Ego, Part 1. If you'd like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 352 comments on the postcards thread, which is a 50% increase from our last episode. Listeners, keep the comments coming because we love your feedback. You guys want to go ahead and get started?
Let's get this party started.
Let's get this party started, right?
I'm doing a head bob, but you can't tell.
A black eyed piece in my head.
Okay, well, we're starting on Twitter. So, at Anne Marie Seagull 1 on Twitter says, OMG, has there ever been a worse ex in all of Star Trek history than Narek? No. I've tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he just really set a new bar for low.
I kind of liked him at first, but then, you know, now I don't.
I still don't know exactly what he's going to do in the next episode, but we also have Beta Artemis, and I knew she was going to say this, because I even turned to Dave and I said, Belinda's going to love this. Finally, OSHA has won seatbelts. My dream has come true. Hallelujah.
Yeah, Belinda's talked about that before.
So many times.
What's OSHA?
Occupational... Safety and Health Administration, I
there
think.
There we go.
Oh, see, I thought it was something to do with occupational health and safety, but I was like, oh, man, it's the wrong way around.
Yeah.
So now we can't
say OSA. We have to say OSHA. They forced it into a thing that's easier to say, I guess.
It's a more palatable acronym.
Yeah.
Did you like that?
Yeah, palatable acronym.
Yeah. I don't know, Narek, I'm kind of like... I don't know where I am with Narek.
I don't either, because I think that there's something more going on there, and I don't know what it is.
Do you think he likes her or loves her, or do you think he's being emotionally manipulative and abusive?
I honestly think it's both.
think yeah. he doesn't even know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he has it straight in his head.
Aww. He's got mental issues and emotional issues.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
But I mean, his are pretty bad. But then look at his sister. Are we really surprised?
Runs yeah. in the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot going on in that family that we don't know about specifically yet. Yeah.
I don't actually want to know most of it, so.
I mean, yeah. Awkward. Mark White says, favorite line in this episode. So are you here to help with the cleanup or do you just make messes? 7 of 9. And Tyler Orenchuk says, my favorite part of the entire series was the scene with Picard and Raffi in this episode when he says, I love you too. It made my heart detonate into a million pieces. So good. That 7 line was well done.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a very, very 7 of 9 kind of comment to make. As for the I love you too scene, Picard delivered that well as well. I didn't really mind the scene. I was wondering whether some people would view that as a I love you in a romantic way. Because, I mean, I didn't get that. But
No.
I'm only saying because I've heard it already.
No. No, it's good. Not that. It was never good. That.
Uh-huh. Well, no, I know, but I've seen it written somewhere that it was. And I'm like,
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm saying... I'm not the authority, but I am saying flat out, no, there was never anything romantic going on there. Good. It's always been just friendship.
Good. Yeah. Friendship and mentor.
Yes. Yeah. Friends and colleagues.
Yeah.
And Brandy, you're the authority of me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just you remember it.
Kenji Higashihama says, this episode left me feeling very uneasy, very curious to see where the last episode takes us. Denis Bélanger says, I think Spot 2 is the mastermind behind all this plot. Season 2 will be titled Star Trek Picard, The Wrath of Spot. That comment also rhymes.
Yes, it does. Spot and plot. I don't know if he intended that, but well done. Well done.
See, I'd watch The Wrath of Spot.
Yeah. That would be a good animated short.
Yeah. That would be quite a funny short track. Also, you can see Star Trek Picard, The Wrath of Spot in the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. That's absolutely true.
As for Kenji's comment, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it takes us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'll be honest, I have no idea what's going to happen. Not even in inkling.
Which is a good thing. It's a good thing to be able to go into an episode and actually not knowing what's going on. So
yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, like, drama in this episode, but it was also kind of like it felt like the calm before the storm, even though there were some stormy moments. Stormy weather.
I knew you were going to do it. I heard it in my mind. I heard it in my mind.
You were going to do it if I didn't.
Yeah, but you did it better. Okay, so Mike Mann, first time commenter. I called the Brent Spiner appearance. Didn't see the sense turning rogue, though. Wonder if the Uber sense will show up and if they will look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. What? And then they'll hold out their hand and say, come with me if you want to live.
They'll probably then bring a donkey to the table.
What?
Have you not seen Arnold Schwarzenegger's tweets?
No.
Do not start this again. You did this yesterday on the Edge. Do not start this.
But I'm sorry. It's like the most amusing thing to come out of the coronavirus is Schwarzenegger that's a terrible word, feeding donkeys at a table.
Oh, God. Whoa. Oh, wait. Maybe I did briefly see something like that.
I'm
Arnold Schwarzenegger doing donkeys at the feeding donkeys at the table.
Oh boy,
it's too soon.
Oh boy,
to go off the rails.
Oh my goodness. Just move on. And then our good friend Bruce Gibson, William Shatner is calling Alex Kurtzman saying he could come back as a Kirk android and take down all of the Romulans.
Why not?
Sure.
Why not bring another X character back?
Sure. It could happen.
Sure, Shat.
With digital effects being what they are. I mean,
There'd need to be some serious digital effects.
Oh, my.
Well, what you do is you get a younger actor that resembles the body type, and the head shape, and then you superimpose a younger face upon it, because de-aging doesn't always work the way that you think it does. A lot of times it's actually a different actor altogether, and they just put a younger version of that other actor's face on top of it. So,
and you guys, it's actually William Shatner's birthday today, the day
it
of this
is.
Recording.
Is it?
March 22nd. Uh-huh.
Oh, I see it's March 23rd here. Sorry.
Oh, that's right. So, happy birthday, Shat.
Yeah.
89 years old.
Happy belated birthday.
From the future.
You're connecting with us in real time here, so technically.
Exactly. Rhea Papagiorgio says, looks like Data if he'd become old and soft. Ha ha ha, that was great. The reason everyone said Spiner could never come back and play Data. And Brando Calrissian says, love the weird space flowers. Star Trek needed some of that weird old sci-fi like it used to. Looking at you, giant green hand.
I didn't make the connection with the giant hand. That's cool.
Yeah, I actually did. I thought of many original series things. It made me happy.
I mean, those giant weird space flowers were awesome. I thought they were great.
Yeah, they were really pretty.
I've seen some people not liking them, as I'm sure we'll go on to in questions.
We'll
and concerns,
get there, yeah.
I mm-hmm. liked them. And I'm not a fan of Spiner coming back to play the Sung character.
Oh, you're not?
No, I am not.
Okay. All right.
But we'll get to that.
I'm a fan of it.
I'm kind of like, meh. I didn't hate it, didn't love it. So...
I did like Rhea, the line, looks like Data if he'd become old and soft, kind of like a self-own there, you know?
I didn't even realize that was a reason.
Well, yeah, everybody was saying, oh, Brent Spiner can't do Data anymore. I mean, look right. at him. So, mm-hmm. which is, first of all, rude.
True, yeah.
Second of all, technology.
Super rude. Yeah. Well, Suzanne Williamson. Hello, Suzanne.
Suzanne.
Hey.
Says, aw, they used the same time-lapse decomposing fox that was in True Blood's opening sequence. Now I'm feeling the need to watch that show again. Suzanne, I've only seen the pilot, and I haven't gotten past it, and that was years ago. I suppose I should go watch that eventually.
I enjoyed it, but it sort of fell apart near the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heather Murray says, I loved Elnor's candor when he tells Picard that this goodbye is different, because this time Picard is dying. I know it's a serious topic, but something about the character's delivery made me chuckle. I know Elnor isn't everyone's favorite, but I got just enough of him this season to want more. Also, this was the first episode where I was able to see Picard as the Picard I'm more familiar with, especially when he tells his crew there will be no more discussion about his condition. I haven't heard a lot of people say that Elnor isn't everyone's favorite, but I love Elnor.
I love Elnor.
All three love Elnor.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right, Liam?
Elnor's really sweet.
Yeah. I think you're sweet on Elnor.
Oh, of course.
I'm sweet on Elnor. I'm way too old for him, but hey, that never stopped me.
I'm also sweet on Santiago Cabrera.
Yeah, same. Never stopped me either, and also, yeah, Santiago.
Mm.
Now, with that scene where Picard was telling the crew of the La Serena that he was getting sick, or not getting, but is sick and it's terminal, it almost sort of reminded me of like, hey guys, so this has happened, I'm sick, move on, don't want to hear about it. And just almost brushing it off and saying, yeah, I'm sick, but let's
yeah,
just move on.
I feel like it's kind of unfair to his companions because he's already dealt with it, but they haven't.
Yeah.
And actually saying there will be no more discussion of this is kind of harsh.
And Michelle Hurd, her little tiny facial expressions when she's talking and then moving over and looking at Soji or Jurati, I can't remember which one it was, you could just see the hurt and mm-hmm. how upset that she was, how upset mm-hmm. Rafi was.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether I would have probably approached it differently in that I would have had Picard at some point telling Elnor and Rafi the full story, as opposed to the crew of the La Serena, and then just having Elnor go, but you're dying. I think it would have been a little bit more powerful if he told Elnor, not maybe, you know, Rios or Jurati, because they've only known each other for not that very long.
Hmm. But Jurati saw the tricorder reading.
Yeah, exactly.
The medical tricorder reading.
I suppose he had to bring it up with the crew because she might have said something, even though, you know, doctor-patient confidentiality.
Mm-hmm. Well, Girardi's not exactly the most ethical doctor at this time.
Yeah, good point.
Brandy. Oi. You love her and you hate her. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Quite a balancing act. Okay, Andrea Boot says, the world may be completely topsy-turvy right now, but at least I still have Picard to look forward to this week and next. After that, who knows? Rewatch all of the Trek? Start something new? Actually crack on with my dissertation? This week's episode was just amazing. We're used to seeing Picard as this guy from TNG who people just trust to come in and save the day for them. Yet the synths were incredibly suspicious of him and essentially wanted nothing to do with him, which honestly, I loved. It just shows that Picard isn't this infallible demigod the Trek lore of old sometimes makes him out to be. There are species and individuals out there who don't go around implicitly trusting the savior protagonist. Fair point.
I love the infallible demigod the Trek lore of old sometimes makes him out to be. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing that I think a lot of people have a problem with, that he's not that.
Yeah, well, he's not.
He's human.
Yeah.
Exactly.
None of us are. We're human. We're not even close to godhood. And honestly, do you really want that level of responsibility? I don't. No. But
then you'll just be cute and then you'll be bored of it.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Mm.
I mean, how do you keep yourself entertained when you can literally do absolutely anything that you want?
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Do podcasts?
Well, I mean, that's about the only thing you can do now that we're told to almost stay indoors, eh? So
record parody songs.
Yeah, that too.
By the way, if you guys haven't heard The Edge, it's the second episode of the Ships of Discovery. What's the name of it?
It's Edge 86, the chunky side things.
Edge 86. Y'all have to listen to Brandy's song in there. I'm not going to say what it is. Go and listen to it because it's freaking brilliant.
Thank you.
It still gets stuck in my head.
And it's all your fault, Liam. You dared me to do it, so.
Paloma Bennett says, my favorite part of the episode is when Arcana, who appears to be a leader of the synths, approaches Picard after recognizing him as Data's captain. Arcana feels an emotional connection to him. She touches Picard's wrinkles, noting how they are just lines, but they imply grief and endurance. Arcana thinks the wrinkles are marvelous.
Oh, I loved that.
I thought that was cool.
I loved that. It was so pretty. It was just one of those moments that, you know, we don't really think about because, oh, wrinkles equal, that means you're old and you're becoming less and less useful and just less than in the eyes of society, but she's right. It actually does imply grief and endurance and all the other things you've done in your life.
It's a mark of everything that's happened to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those lifelines, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, beautiful.
Matthew Bell, while it's a bit lazy to have a hitherto unknown son of Soong just spring out of the woodwork, I can't deny it's great to see Spiner back on screen. As for his appearance, well, we already know from Enterprise just how persistent the DNA in the Soong's family tree is. Strongest ever since the Tannins and McFlys.
My husband Dave said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, I knew that would be something you guys liked.
Yeah, without the Tannins and McFlys, but yeah, he said.
What's the Tannins?
Biff Tannen.
Oh,
that would be
Biff Tannen. Yeah.
Marty.
So this is a Back to the Future reference, obviously.
Yes.
The same characters played the older ones. Yeah.
Rebecca Skipper says, "If you treat me like an old man, you run the risk of pissing me off." Awesome line from Picard. This episode honors past Trek in so many ways. Fear of the other and the need to survive. Two cultures see the same vision and have vastly different interpretations. Federation and Romulans fear the synthetics and the synthetics fear for their lives. I'm reminded of the Enterprise augments, yes, and the TNG scene where the alien refers to humans as mostly, quote, ugly bags of water, end quote. Wow, yeah. Star Trek Picard is confronting a sci-fi trope and using it to uphold the value of life, both real and synthetic.
Hmm. I love Rebecca's observations.
Yes.
I always look through the Babel Conference feedback and postcards episodes, and I do like to pick out Rebecca's comments because they always interest me.
Yeah.
The only thing that I will say is that he actually said, if you treat me like a dying man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, close.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's just interchangeable in most people's vocabulary when it comes to talking about people of a certain age. So,
One of my favorite parts of this episode was the fact that the two cultures have the same vision and vastly different interpretations, as Rebecca says. Like, the Romulans seeing it one way and the synthetics seeing it as another, or the synthetics seeing it as what it's meant to be as a whole.
Mm.
That was one of my favorite plot twists of the show.
Yes. Still kicking myself for not figuring that out sooner.
I didn't think of it either.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Which is good, which is what you want from a show instead of some certain things, like maybe a few episodes of Discovery was a little bit more predictable.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like that, you know, quote unquote, holy scriptures or texts or whatever, like everyone's interpreting things a different way and then it causes division.
Yeah.
Yeah, except there were literally things in this particular message that were unable to be understood by organics that were coded specifically for synthetic life. So it's not just a matter of interpretation. It literally can't be interpreted. Wow. It can't be interpreted properly by an organic. So y'all, you know, it's, unfortunately only the sense really know what it means. All right. So they interpreted it properly.
And this is why they scratched their faces off and pulled their hair out and smashed their brains with rocks.
Yeah, exactly, because it wasn't meant for them.
Mm-hmm.
Zachary Jackson says, Sutra is an intriguing character. When introduced, she showcases Data's manner of speaking with a neutral lilt about poignant topics, so much so that her use of contraction stuck out to me, reminiscent of Lore. She also seems to be able to easily emote as a means of manipulation, like when comforting Agnes before the meld, or sultry crab crawling all up on Narek. My favorite baddie so far.
That was so ew.
Sultry crab crawling. Wow. It's so true.
That's accurate.
Yeah. It was uncomfortable, to say the least.
Uh-huh. I really liked her too.
Do you buy that Sutra is the evil twin of Janna? Because I'm not really sure I believe the whole one of them's evil, one of them's not. Because they wouldn't be built evil.
I don't think it's about good and evil.
Well, but that's what sort of like the perception of Data and Lore.
Yeah. But right. I just feel like she thinks she knows a lot more than everybody else. And she is also completely convinced that she's right. And so that makes her very much more dangerous than the other sense.
See, I think Sutra has got herself so far into the Vulcan logic side of things that she's lost emotion in a way, because if you look at her compared to people like Arcana and Saga, both of those synths have emotion in their eyes, whereas I find Sutra has no emotion in her eyes whatsoever.
I see emotion in her eyes.
Do you? I don't see it. I feel like they're almost not dead, but
I think she has this kind of superiority complex.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just a different way of perceiving it.
You know, remember when she goes up to Agnes and she says, you're terrified, you know?
Yeah, but I still didn't see that as a concerned. Hmm. More intrigue.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was my view.
Well, different interpretations for different people, and that's a good thing. Because if we all saw the world the same way, how boring life would be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Daniel Huckfield says, I really enjoyed this episode. Felt a lot happened, but once again, the episode had the feeling of a pause. It is funny how this series has so many pauses, but has managed to continue moving. The story feels primed to finish in spectacular style, but I do fear the possibility of the ending being rushed. I would have liked the ending to have started in this episode rather than leaving everything to the last episode of the season. Okay. Yeah. I guess this is kind of a comment and question and concern, but you still enjoyed the episode, Daniel, which is nice. And I do like the pauses that kind of happened throughout. And this definitely also felt like one of those episodes similar to Nepenthe.
I sort of disagree with that. I don't think this was as much of a pause as people think. It's sort of just setting all the pieces in the right position. I think Nepenthe was a pause that we didn't have to have. That's my controversial opinion.
Oh, that is controversial. Yeah.
Well, the thing about story is that people often mistake action for movement, and it's not the same thing. No, I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying in general, people, if there's not action, then nothing's moving. No, the plot is always moving. The characters are always developing. And having those quieter moments doesn't mean that there isn't movement. There is much movement. So I think that actually Nepenthe provided a great deal of movement, especially with Picard and Soji. So that's my personal opinion. But again, opinion is not fact, because we all see things a different way.
Yeah, I guess the pause for me, why I see it similar to Nepenthe, is because we're on a different planet. We're somewhere else and stuff is going on and developing. We're not in the main area of where we've been before. We're not as much on the artifact. We're not as much, you know, we're not on Earth. We're not just on La Serena. We're in a different location now for a more extended period of time. Okay. And to me, that feels like pause-ish to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of going back to what Brandy was saying, though, I like the slow moments in Broken Pieces, episode 8. There are a lot of slow moments in that one, but they worked for me in terms of they were moving along with the character progression of both Rafi and Rios and Jurati and Soji. They were moving all along, whereas I just felt like Nepenthe was shoved in. But anyway, I know I'm not going to win many awards on that opinion.
It's not about that. It's a different interpretation.
Yeah.
We all interpret things differently depending on our personal preferences, our life choices. You know, all of these things influence how we view things. And there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's just how you see things. So
I probably read angry Twitter too much with that.
Oh, yeah. I stay away from that as much as possible.
Yeah, I never read angry Twitter. Anyway.
But I will say for the record that Nepenthe is actually in my top, maybe my favorite episode of the season so far.
I think last week's was for me.
I don't pick favorites, so.
Well, that's not entirely true.
Yes, who's your captain, huh?
Who's your favorite captain, Brandy?
Liam thought he knew. Last week. Well, yeah, that's the thing, is you thought you knew Liam, but then I brought up all of these other reasons why it could be somebody else. So do you know if you're right?
No, I don't know now. You've thrown me right off.
I have an idea, but I'm never going to say it.
No, who was it? Who
did that? No, I'm not going there.
Okay, although part of me does feel like I know who it is now. I've had a longer think about it.
Well, I'll also be fair in saying that I did have a favorite captain before 2018, and that the list has changed more than one time.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
Just so you know. Anyway, okay, so Lori Damon Bowes says, I am so glad they chose to present a diverse-looking group of android/synth/Soong-type life forms. After Rios' reaction to Soji, I believed we would be presented with a CGI army of beings identical to Soji. After all, we've seen something similar in TNG, where all Soong-types but one resembled Data. That teeny, tiny, impish grin after Picard says, I love you too. How Star Trek-y was this episode? I give it 9 out of 10 Roddenberries.
Roddenberry, have you had a Roddenberry pie?
I'm allergic, actually. Just kidding. I didn't think everybody would look like Soji, because you're forgetting Beautiful Flower. Beautiful Flower was not like Soji at all. It was a male synth, so I figured there would be a variety of different synths. So
yeah, and we did have actual twins playing the twins on the episode too.
Arcana and Saga and the other guys.
Yeah.
Rune, I think his name was Rune and Kavox or something. I don't know. I looked that up on IMDb and I've forgotten already. Yeah.
That's okay.
So, Slankston Hughes says...
Which is an amazing name.
Yes, it is. Except now I'm going to have to do this. Longtime Trek.fm super fan and Trekkie since age 5. Love all of the Edge and the Line shows. Well, thank you, Slankston. At least somebody likes this. Hey, Brandy. Listen to this coming week's Edge to find out why we say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's new to the Babel Conference and this is where it's going to be bad, first time commenter sings in my head. Oh, I should have sung that in my head.
That was, wait, pause. That was gorgeous, Liam.
Yeah. Mm.
That was amazing.
It was.
Yeah. Well, did you practice?
No.
I really now want to hear you do the Enterprise theme song as Cher. You've just piqued my interest.
Oh, my God. It's been a long time.
My time is finally here.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I've got faith of the heart.
Going where my heart can take me.
Oh, my God. Cher singing that song is freaking brilliant. It's perfect. Like a dance remix.
Somebody get Cher on that right now.
Please.
Pass the word along that Cher needs to cover Faith of the Heart. Or Liam as Cher needs to cover Faith of the Heart.
Can you do it in drag?
Maybe? I was telling Brandy and Nick yesterday that I was singing it like Cher at about 11 o'clock at night. Into Jordan's ear in bed the other week. He's just like, go away.
That's amazing. Okay. Oh, sorry, Slankston. Back to Slankston. See, I told you guys.
Love this episode. One of my faves of the season, right up there with Nepenthe. Definitely didn't see the Spiner twist coming. Thought it would be an android Sung of some type played by Brent Spiner, but I didn't think it would be Sung's actual human son or that one of those even existed. Awesome reveal. Also, I'm getting major Lore vibes from Sutra, aka Laurie. Cannot wait for Thursday to get here. That was in capitals. Keep up the amazing work at Postcards.
Aww,
yes, do keep up the amazing work at Postcards, Chris. I love it.
Thanks, Slankston Hughes.
And, yeah, I didn't see the Spiner twist coming because I totally missed that Brent Spiner was a special guest star because it was on the complete opposite side of the credits on the screen. So I didn't see that coming, but I appreciated having a Sung character. I didn't appreciate it being Brent Spiner just because I'm sort of a bit overseeing Star Trek characters from the past.
Hmm.
And I think that's just because my opinion is clouded of it by Nepenthe. Not that I'm saying that they did a bad job of Nepenthe, I just didn't see that it was had much point.
You hate it. Just admit it. You hated it.
I don't hate it because I try not to hate things. But
well, you try, but
it wasn't my favorite episode.
Shall we talk about how you feel about TOS then?
I don't hate it, I just don't like it, and I don't have to, don't get me started on this again, because my opinion is not changing, Chris, even though you got shitty with me.
Oh, sorry, it's my fault,
not your fault at all.
Notice how Brandy's staying out of this at the moment.
Are you getting Lore vibes from Sutra?
I wouldn't say Lore vibes. I wouldn't say she's insane, but she is totally convinced that she's right, and there's nothing so dangerous as a zealot.
Yeah.
Oh, ain't that the truth? She's a little Lorey, I guess.
Yeah, a bit. A bit.
In the sociopathic, possibly sociopathic sort of way.
Mm. Yeah. That's fair.
Maybe.
Nadim Bayati says, very dense episode. Need to watch it a few times to figure out what's going on. Jurati will surely redeem herself. I mean, she must know where the off switch is located on Sutra. Brent Spiner, wonderful. Was kinda expecting the cube with Seven and Elnor to help out in some way, and they might still have a role to play in the final episode. So a lot of good points here, Nadim. The Jurati situation, how she kind of played the other side a little bit. What do you guys think about that?
I think she just wants to try and do right.
Yeah, I said in the live show that we did with Bruce and you, and you, Chris, and Dan, that her allegiances change really quickly. And I think it's a sign of naivete that she just hasn't had a lot of life experience. I mean, she'd never been in space.
Right.
For a spacefaring culture in 2399.
Yeah, so I feel like she just wasn't prepared for people to, you know, not be completely forthcoming about their motives and thoughts. So she, it just, I guess, didn't occur to her until she was on the other side of that fence, kind of forced into the other side of that fence. So I just, the character is complex in ways that I hadn't imagined when she first came on the scene. Cause at first I was just kind of like, I don't care about you at all. Go away. But then she just didn't go away and she became very interesting. So, yeah.
I kind of think she's playing both sides. I think she did that to have a way to maybe help sabotage their plan a little bit in the future, but I could be reading too much into it.
I honestly don't know, because I think that she's correct and is not good at lying. She said that she wasn't good at lying, which is why O put that psychic block in her mind to keep her from talking about what she'd seen.
Hmm.
She's devastated at killing Bruce Maddox.
Oh, I agree.
She just wants to try and help to make things better. And with Sung saying that Bruce was the substrates guy, but, you know, he's dead now, she can try and continue that work.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's all she's thinking about.
Yeah, I think she's absolutely desperate to redeem herself because she can't deal with the guilt. There's no form of repentance for taking a life that, you know, will make her feel better.
Yeah, and now she gets to create a life.
Yep.
Which, in the first two watches of this episode, I thought that creating a life was spot two, but it's not spot two.
No, it's that mind transfer thing he's having
to work
on. Yeah,
but I thought, oh, she made a cat. Oh, God, of course it's spot two. And then it took me until this morning when I quickly watched bits of it to realize that it wasn't the cat.
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's be fair. That's not spot two. That's spot, like, 30 by now. Come on.
Probably. Also, just quickly with the cube, they've totally just moved that into position for a future story purpose.
Yes.
And agreed. I'm hoping, and I know I've said that I don't like things from previous Trek being like completely in your face, but Seven of Nine said that they did pick up the La Serena and that and the crew inside the conduit. What's the bet that if she's picked it up, that the actual Borg collective has as well?
Possible.
Possibly, except that they're disconnected from the Borg collective.
Yeah, but the transwarp conduit's not. You would assume.
Okay.
So, and also, that Borg cube coming out of that conduit at Capellius, oh my God, I had chills. I loved that. That was
so
my
cool.
Second favorite scene of the whole entire episode.
Same.
That was so awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, Rhea Papagiorgio says, okay, Sutra creeped me out from before the first moment we saw her. She's the Nerissa-style, mustache-twirling synth villain. Sung Jr. is also pretty sketchy. Very sketchy, actually. Very Lori. A few days ago, it occurred to me that the brother that Narek lost could be the male synth that Rios' captain killed. Not sure how that would work out, but the way Slimeball Sutra reacted to Narek, I can't rule it out yet. Soong does not have a good ethical track record going back to Enterprise. The whole planet of dodgy, unsettling synths makes me wonder how Data, Dodge, and Soji turned out so well.
So this is going around a lot that people are thinking that Alton Inigo is possibly Lore. This is This is a theory that's going around.
But they'd have had to have put Law back together again. Oh, I suppose they could have just taken his neurons.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I don't know. But something that somebody did point out is that, and I want to know what you guys think about that, but somebody did point out that his initials are AI.
Yeah, which will be very, very deliberate.
That's got to be deliberate. But what do y'all think about him possibly being Lore?
I don't want it. I would be so disappointed.
Yeah, me
that's
too.
That's taking it too far. I don't know anyone in my immediate circle that wants that. And I definitely don't.
I'd have preferred actually having Lal over Lore.
Right?
And I didn't want Lal either, so.
Oh, I loved Lal.
I mean, I liked the character, but I didn't need her in this show.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't either. Besides, she lived and died, you know? She had her experience.
True, yeah.
I don't know about that the synth is the brother that Narek lost, that beautiful flower synth. I don't know. I'm not...
How would that have worked?
I don't know. I'm not really buying that one, Rhea. I love you, but I don't get that one. But you also said you're not sure how it would work.
Yeah, but that's the thing. How could it possibly have worked?
Mm-mm.
There is no physical way that could have worked.
Mm-mm.
So I'm going to go with a no on that one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Why couldn't it have worked?
What? How would it have worked?
Yeah, explain how it would work.
Well, I think it's pretty ridiculous, but I reckon it could happen. Like, why couldn't he be a synth, though? In terms of, I need a reason for him not to be a synth.
Because, one,
he hates synths. Doesn't matter.
Two, this happened how many years ago? And it was a first contact situation, according to the captain of the Ibn Majid. Because he contacted Starfleet and said this is a first contact situation.
Okay, yep, right. No, that's right. Yep, I forgot. Yep,
so
you're fine.
Yeah,
I yield.
And I feel like if the synth looked like a Romulan, then that would have also been information that would have been known by Rios, and he would have said something about that.
Well, not only that, but he had a drawing of them, and it was very, very much not a Romulan.
No, that was him. That was Jana and Rios.
Oh, yeah.
Was it? I think it was a younger Rios.
That was younger Rios. Yeah.
Oh, that was Beautiful Flower that did the drawing, wasn't it?
Correct, yeah.
Ah.
Okay, I got confused. Even so, it was a first contact situation, so they'd never seen these people before.
Michael Bentley says, I'm not sure if this means anything or not, but I've just realized that the death of Arcana recalls the show's apparent preoccupation with damaged or removed left eyes, especially in Stardust City Rag. Icheb's left eye removal, Seven's implant, Picard's eye patch, and now the method of Arcana's killing. Strange. If anyone thinks this is a bit of a stretch, and I must admit I do too, then I suggest looking up the German folktale Coppelius on Wikipedia, which also has a rather horrific preoccupation with missing eyes and the creation of automatons. It's pretty clear from Calypso and elsewhere in Picard that Michael Chabon knows and loves old tales and myths, so I suspect that none of this is coincidental, even if it's not necessary to know all the references and the repeated imagery may only be intended to register on a subliminal level. I'm going to read more about that story of Coppelius now. It's a creepy story.
Nice connection!
Very cool. Yeah.
Wow! That's amazing. I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
I didn't either.
I don't know the story of Coppelius.
I don't either, but judging from what Michael has said, that can't be an accident.
No.
No way.
That's definitely purposeful.
And I do like that you're mentioning Calypso, which is Liam's favorite short trek from Discovery Season 1.
It is my least favorite of all short treks. I have no class, apparently.
It's opinion. It doesn't matter.
I'm not going to say that you do, but just kidding.
Hey, I just sung Cher style Enterprise theme for you. I mean,
yeah, the epitome of class,
yep,
right there.
Definitely.
Class is overrated. Anyway,
whatever happened to? Okay, Well, you know what? Let's move on to your questions and concerns now. How about that? Y'all ready to move on?
Ready.
Sure. I feel like there are a few.
There are a lot in this one. Michael Braun says, I am really sorry, but this episode was so absurd. I am finding myself struggling to refrain from not using any words I shouldn't use, even weirder than the Lord of the Ring-like episode on the planet Vashti, and that I love you conversation was so awkward. I mean, Picard had love affairs before, and none of them were so embarrassing. But this wasn't a love affair.
No.
It's okay if you think the episode is absurd. That's fine. There were moments of camp, I thought, and I mentioned this also on the live show with Brandy and Bruce and Dan, that there were lots of moments of TNG-style camp that felt like that to me anyway.
Kind of reminded me of that TNG episode where it had all the people in the white with, like, good bodies dancing around some grass.
Mm-hmm.
Justice.
Is that what it was called? I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Justice, where it had the big God thing in the sky, and Wesley trips over and crushes some flowers, and now he's going to be put to death.
Yeah, that episode.
Yeah, that's Justice. Picard even, in fact, says in an earlier episode, which is Broken Pieces, that he is not good at expressing emotions. So for him to actually say that meant that Raffi means a lot to him. And
right.
Again, I never felt like it was anything but a friendship and a mentorship sort of feeling.
I think this came up too. I like that. I think in Picard's mind, even though it's not something that we hear him say often or ever, that I feel like Picard is kind of like, do I really have to say it? Like, you already know that. Like, you must know that I love you.
I mean, I get that.
I thought he was messing with her. I thought he was just messing with her. And then he made like he was going to walk away and then says, I love you too. And I thought, that guy's messing with her right now. He is messing with her right now. Making her think he wasn't going to say that.
That's the worst.
That's what happens with emotionally stunted people.
I say likewise.
You say likewise, Liam?
Jordan will say, I love you, and I go, likewise, and it really annoys him.
Say the words.
Say it, Liam.
I'm a bit like Picard.
Okay. Ian Bartholomew says, I feel like a huge chunk of this episode's plot was already done in the TOS episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of? Like I feared last week, they've misjudged the pacing of the series and left too much for the last two episodes. I will be shocked if they land this satisfactorily next week. Fingers crossed for something special, though.
Yeah, I do get the feeling that it could potentially be a rushed ending.
Maybe. But it's not going to end. There's going to be some dun-dun-dun at the very end, obviously.
Well, it depends on what they're going to be planning with season two.
I really, really hope that it's not a season-ending cliffhanger. I really hate those, and we have moved past those as a society. I like the way Discovery did it in season one, where they closed off that particular story and started another one, and that was the cliffhanger. That is how you get me to come back.
Right.
So, well, they did the same with season two as well, Discovery. So that's what they'll probably do with this, if anything, if those two seasons are to go by.
I think
that's the new formula now, is to wrap it up and then pull at this other different thing.
Dangle a new carrot.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, one of the best series ever to do that, and this is going to sound weird, but Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was absolutely brilliant at doing that. In fact, they would break up the season into two halves. And so you'd have your first half, and that would get resolved mid-season. But in that first half, there would also start something that becomes the second story. And then they would resolve that and then have a teaser for what's going to happen at the beginning of the next season. And I'm like, oh, I love this resolution and payoff and titillation.
So. Dangling, what is it called?
Juicy danglers.
Juicy danglers. I was going to say dangling participles.
It's a very British thing. So yeah, they started doing that, and I loved that. I just appreciate finishing a story before you start another one.
Yeah. Did it remind you of the TOS episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of, from your recent and thorough watching of the original series?
is What Are Little Girls Made Of one of the first five episodes?
No.
Then no.
I don't believe so.
I have got no idea what Ian's talking about. Sorry.
Yeah.
Everybody rushes to Wikipedia. What was that episode?
I had heard that before, too. I had heard a couple of connections from TOS with this episode. Just ideas.
Okay, Frosty Winnipeg says, when I saw another Soong relative, I thought, oh no, not again. I agree, to a certain extent. Duncan Barrett says, is there a reason that every male Soong looks identical, like super strong genes, or are they actually clones or something? Presumably, this one is the son of the original Juliana. And what? Or is that going to be Juliana?
Juliana.
Yeah.
It's Juliana.
Fuck's sake.
I mean, that's not inaccurate in certain accents and dialects, you know?
If you speak Spanish.
Right.
Presumably, this one is the son of the original Juliana.
You got it.
Woo!
And Danny Belanger says, is he also French, this guy? Did you ask him how?
I did. I think I saw that he is French. And I just wanted to say his name that way earlier, too.
Danny
Belanger.
Danny Belanger says, I can hear Billy Joel. I'm in a law-like state of mind. Christopher D. Littlefield, I'm sure you could sing that for us.
Oh, gee. I wonder if that could happen.
I wonder where that idea comes from. What's going to happen?
I guess y'all will have to wait and see if that's going to happen.
So I agree with Frosty in terms of not another Soong relative that looks like Brent Spiner. I didn't mind Soong, as I've already said. And yeah, I got a laugh at Duncan's comment.
Yeah, I'm assuming this is Juliana's kid, the original Juliana's kid. Jim Stoffel says, is that Picard's android body in the chamber when or if he dies? I hope not. Will Soji be the hero and defeat the evil androids? I hope so. Brian Diggs says, I still don't understand which lab got destroyed. Did Soong/Lore destroy that lab? Could the Maddox Jurati killed have been a synth telling an untruth? And Suman Dewan says, where was Beautiful Flower's twin? These are all really good questions.
Actually, one of those has been answered. It was the Romulans that destroyed the lab.
Ah.
They talk about that.
That's right.
They destroyed everything.
Right. But we don't know about the body, the little golem that's in there.
Yeah, do you know what?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be for Picard, and Picard's going to decline.
Yeah. That's what I thought, too. Dave immediately said that was the solution to the Picard is dying problem.
That's what both Jordan and I said as well. They wouldn't have brought up that at the beginning of this episode to remind people about it and then bring up a golem like that.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's fascinating.
And I think Picard will decline because he probably just wouldn't want to be a synth. Not that being a synth's a bad thing. He'll just want to say that his course has been run. His story is over.
Right.
At the same time, though, he could become the ultimate advocate for synthetic life.
This was my thought a couple of days ago. He would actually be both, right? Mm-hmm. He would be the Picard that the Federation knows, and he would also be the result of synth technology.
Yep.
So he'd be the ultimate emissary.
Yeah, I suppose they could make that into a good storyline.
I think people would riot, though.
Yeah, they probably would.
Probably. And I probably wouldn't be that far behind them. But just in terms of it was so an obvious thing, if that makes sense. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Suman, I also want to know where Beautiful Flower's twin is.
I feel like this might be a reveal next episode.
Interesting.
It's a juicy dangler. Mm.
Juicy danglers.
Love things that dangle.
That are juicy.
Ew. Rhys Morgan says, could have done without the magic space flowers. I mean, come on. Are they synthetic space flowers, or are we supposed to believe Mr. Retcon Soong has mastered manipulating biology as well as technology? I could maybe accept just the butterflies. Other than that, great episode. I like how we are very unsure who to side with now. I'm feeling the pull toward Team Romulan Death Fleet.
Well, I mean, they're manipulating biology anyway.
Yeah, they created the flowers. That was... Mm-hmm. In the episode too, it was very brief. I missed it the first time, but the second time I caught it.
Yeah, well, they can create more given time, but right. They only had like a day, and so they only made what, an additional
15?
Eight. They had 15.
Oh yeah, and then they lost five.
And then they lost five, and then I can't remember how many. She said she had 23. Something like that.
Interesting, Rhys, that you're feeling a pull toward Team Romulan Death Fleet.
Both sides are wrong.
I'm not going to lie. I always have a pull towards the sort of evil people.
Likewise.
I mean, Commodore O at the end.
Not really.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Yeah. I'm excited about Commodore O and where she is now. I really like that actor a lot.
Tamlin Tomita. No, Tomita.
She's pretty badass.
She is very badass. She's come a long way since Karate Kid 2.
Oh my God, she was in Karate Kid 2?
Yeah, she was Daniel's love interest.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
You
I had no idea.
Didn't know that?
No.
I've known that from the start.
And I just watched this Amazon, like this TV, there's like a, it was on, it's on Amazon Prime, but it's like these fake movies, and the Karate Kid, the actor who played the Karate Kid is in it, and he looks exactly the same as he did, and it was like this fake parody type of trailer for a movie with him. I can't remember what it's called.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I couldn't tell you. But yeah, she's very cool. I have always liked her. So it's nice to see her again. Anytime I see her, I've always enjoyed what she's done.
Brian Malosh says, this is my least favourite episode this season. I didn't like the plot twist of the Synth Alliance coming to destroy the organics. I especially didn't like Sutra doing the mind meld. The Orchids are just dumb in my opinion. They are a one-use defensive weapon, which is just not practical for orbital defences. Oh, and why does a poke in the eye cause a synth to die? I guess that's all I'll say this week here. Yeah, I don't think Brian liked this episode, did you, Brian?
No, I guess not.
Yeah, I liked the plot twist of the fact that only synths could understand it. I'm not a fan of the all organics must die thing. We had that in Discovery with all sentient life. Mm-hmm. And the whole universe with the mycelial network destruction. So I'm a little bit over the all thing. But anyway, and I didn't mind Sutra doing the mind meld. I mean, if you've created the physiology of humans, why can't you create the physiology behind how Vulcans can do a mind meld?
Yeah, that doesn't bother me at all.
No, because we discussed this in the live show as well, mm-hmm. that in season one of Discovery, Michael goes through a technology-induced mind meld with Sarek.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, it's possible. It's absolutely possible.
Yeah.
And besides that, again, it's something that's made up. We don't know exactly how mind melds work. We do know that you're not born knowing how to mind meld, so it is something that you have to learn. I'm guessing that there are some Vulcans who can't do it, or they can't do it very well. So that's just my personal opinion. But
and it's, again, it's not real. It's not a real thing.
And the only thing I can say about the poke in the eye causing a synth to die...
I had an issue with that too, Brandy, though, but you know
I know,
that.
I know. The only thing I can think of is that because of the way we saw it, I feel like it was the hummingbird's beak that was driven into the eye, but that also would go straight into a synthetic brain just as well as it would go into a organic brain. So if you do it with enough force, you're going to disrupt brain function.
I mean, if somebody's going to know exactly where to put it, it would be Sutra.
Yeah.
That was mentioned in the comments after I curated the comments. Somebody said that if Sutra would know exactly where to put it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this, Brandy. We think that it was Sutra that killed her, right?
Absolutely.
Not Narek.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even though they showed the little shot of him eyeing the the brooch.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That was
to put you off.
Yeah, that was a red herring, in my opinion.
Yes, a red herring.
So, because that's the only kind of herring that there is. I don't even know if herrings are red. But the long and short of it is that she would have made sure that she killed Arcana after...
Saga,
after Narek had escaped, because otherwise they'd be searching the city for him. So she had to give him a head start. Mm-hmm. And then when she figured he was outside of the city, that's when she commits the murder. And I'm going to guess that Soong was probably in on it, because he finds her very conveniently and is very melodramatic.
Yeah.
Perfect golden eye.
Oh, no.
I didn't like that line. Perfect golden eye. I don't know. I thought that was weird.
Yeah. So that's my view of it anyway.
I kind of agree with Brian in the sense that they are one-use defensive weapons and that's it. But I guess they're not used to having to defend themselves. So they probably wouldn't have created something so
powerful. Well, they don't get a lot of ship traffic. I think that's obvious.
Yeah.
They're very well hidden.
But at the same time, they're orchids, so they don't look so imposing. So when they're coming at you in space all like flowing and pretty, and then they turn into some kind of Venus flytrap, it's a little bit too late. You're already eaten by it.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of it, is that you don't know that you're being attacked.
Because, I mean, how many times are you going to see an orchid flying through space?
Yeah, everybody's so stunned that they're like, wait, what? And then all of a sudden, oh, we've been swallowed.
It's like, they look like orchids. What are they? I think we just call them orchids.
Kyung Hui says, after the highs of the last few episodes, this one just underwhelmed me. There were certainly things I liked, such as seeing Brent Spiner return, but I'm getting worried that it will just be like season one of Discovery, where the writers won't stick the landing. This is a concern that's been brought up before, and I did feel the Klingon War was rushed through, but I still enjoyed it a lot, and, you know, getting to see the Enterprise and hearing the speech at the end of Discovery was worth it for me.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't have that problem with season one of Discovery, and I didn't want to see the Klingon War. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see several episodes of fighting Klingons. That's not fun.
You want to detour to the Mirror Universe and then come back and wrap it all up.
Yeah, that's what I wanted, just fine.
Because Captain Killy is her favorite captain.
Yeah.
Nope.
Maybe. Killy's a contender, but technically it would actually be Captain... that would actually be Sylvia Tilly pretending to be Captain Killy, which is a great favorite of mine. So... But is it my favorite captain?
But not a captain.
Well, she was playing a captain. And she's in the command track now, but, that's technically true. Not a captain in any case. But that's, it's opinions. It's opinions. I didn't have any problems with the way season one ended, so.
Yeah, me neither.
In terms of underwhelming, I guess I probably had a little bit of that feeling, but at the same time, you have to tell yourself it's episode 9 of a 10-episode season. So this is, and it's also the first of a two-parter. So it's not going to be complete yet as an episode.
Yeah. Well, and have you ever seen a two-parter where the first episode wasn't a ton of setup?
Never.
Exactly.
That's the point.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good point, because people are saying, I enjoy that people say, oh, this was my favorite episode so far. This was my least favorite so far or whatever. But, that opinion isn't really secure yet, because we haven't seen all the episodes. We don't know the whole book. We don't know the whole story yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like watching half of a movie and then saying you don't like the movie. Mm-hmm. That's kind of fair, though. But
yeah.
But it's been more than that.
The only time you can watch half a movie is Day After Tomorrow. Watch the first half, don't watch the second half.
Never seen it.
That's my favorite movie, Chris, or one of. Include that also in includes Hairspray on my list of favorite movies.
I feel the way about The Day After Tomorrow that you feel about the original series. That's not true. I don't know.
I've never seen it. So
you haven't seen Down? You have to watch it. It's a natural disaster movie.
I've seen part of it, and I was just like, what is this? Oh, this is... Oh, okay. I'm bored. So I left. I left the room, I should say. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Heather Marie says, was there something special about Jana and Sutra that made Maddox choose their likeness for Dodge and Soji? Was that his choice or Soong's? I noticed Soong describing Maddox as, quote, deceptive and devious, end quote, as Sutra was approaching Picard from behind. Picard was seated, vulnerable, while Sutra was standing. Something about her Maddox was trying to improve upon? Haha, I'm so confused about all the technical aspects of the cloning. Also, I need to say Sutra is gorgeous and her hair is amazing and her outfit is stunning. As a newly minted homeschool marm who hasn't fully brushed her hair or worn pants that zip in almost a week, I was looking on with envy. Yeah, I'm there with you, Heather. I haven't worn pants. Actually, no, I did have to wear pants that zip today because we had to get groceries.
Did you hear Soong describing Maddox as deceptive and devious? I missed that.
Yeah, I remember him saying that. But when Sutra is approaching Picard from behind, I wasn't even really focusing on anything that he was saying. I was just focusing on the way she walks. And I thought, oh, here comes trouble.
Yeah.
Again, shout out to Issa Briones for being absolutely freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I do wonder what the reason why Dodge and Soji were created to look like Jana and Sutra.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wonder if there is a reason, or they just wanted to put Issa Briones as a GoldenEye android.
Maybe it's just those are the cells they had. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the technology behind it, so...
Chris Argy says, the longer I think about this Jaat Vash, the less it makes sense for me. For an also secret organization behind a secret organization, and with a very secret agenda, they make a lot of noise, ruining the artifact and killing XBs and others, and then commanding 218 warships of the Romulan fleet to some backwater planet out in the sticks under the command of the head of Starfleet security. Shouldn't someone in the Tal Shiar High Command or the new Romulan government at least ask what the flying fuck they are doing there?
Because all of those ships are Jaat Vash or Tal Shiar.
I think it makes sense that it's a little bit convoluted, the idea with this. I mean, I don't know. What do y'all think about that? Does the Jaat Vash make sense to you?
Part of me thought that they forgot that the Jaat Vash existed halfway through the series. Because there was no mention of them in a few episodes, and it was just called the Tal Shiar for a while. Even between Larissa and Narek. Unless Narek is only Tal Shiar. And
that was what I was just going to say. What if he doesn't know about the Jaat Vash?
Which then would explain, because there's been no talk about the Jaat Vash from memory around Narek.
Well, I've noticed that all of the women, and it was all women who were on the Grief Planet, who partook of the admonition, they were the ones that formed the Jaat Vash. So what if the Jaat Vash is only women, and therefore Narissa knows and O knows, but the guys don't?
Yeah.
Oh, and that would make sense with Laris and Jaban. When Laris starts talking about it, and Jaban's like,
it's a myth,
more reticent about it.
Yeah.
And maybe the Jaat Vash is just those women.
I mean, there's a precedent for it with the Coat Malat, which are just female as well, except for Elnor.
But he's not technically Coat Malat.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, because he's male. That could possibly explain it, Chris.
Yeah.
It's just a thought. I don't know if that's right, but it's just a thought.
Yeah, I like it. Headcanon.
I like it too. Yeah. Robert J. Geiger, there's a lot of things I can forgive, but I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around how a synthetic being was able to develop telepathy through, quote, studying. Joey Slawinski says, the space flowers were cool, reminded me of the animated series Plant People. Yes, totally, Joey. Then came the Soong descendant that we had never heard of. That shot grazed my shields, but I was willing to forgive it. Then came the mind meld, learned from a book, while we got exposition that she learned mind melding from a book. It was too much for my canon shields to handle. Worst moment of the series, which has been pretty good for me so far. Brandon Shematala says, mind melding androids, ridiculous.
Mind melding is ridiculous.
Mind melding is ridiculous.
Because we don't know how it works. How is it canon when we don't even know how it works?
Right.
So how can that be a violation of canon? Because there is no canon about mind melding except the way that you physically see it done.
And there's never been a, this is exactly how it works. Yeah. This is what happens physiologically. This is what happens biologically. This is what happens mentally. You know, none of that is a thing.
Yeah.
So they can do whatever they want with it. Like, it just doesn't bother me at all.
Me either.
And sometimes little things do bother me, but this just ain't one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just goes back to what I said, that they could have put the physiology within Sutra to be able to do it. They could have programmed her in a way to end up liking Vulcan stuff from the outset. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can explain it away.
Yeah, and we know that in previous episodes, they've said sometimes synthetic life is superior to organic life. And, you know, maybe she can just do it because she's got whatever neurons that are firing around learning how to do stuff.
Didn't Spock also mind meld with a rock or something?
Well, that's what I was about to say. It has to do with consciousness.
Yeah.
And exactly. And sentience. So if something is sentient, whether it is technological or biological, I would figure that you could mind meld with it.
Right. And that further supports the idea that the sense are sentient.
Exactly.
And that they are life forms, and that they do have a consciousness.
Yeah.
That's an even better way.
I don't think it's ridiculous. Actually, I think it makes perfect sense.
Haven't explained to me like that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And that builds on what this particular season to me is about, and that's, again, what is sentient and what isn't, and how can you classify that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to Measure of a Man.
Yep.
Is Data alive?
Soji had that conversation in last week's episode. Am I human?
Am I a person? Oh, that broke my heart. Okay. Denis Bélanger says, I am conflicted about this episode. The good is excellent. Soong, Seven, Elnor, the jail moments. However, I am left with a lukewarm feeling about Soji's mind-melding sister, who, in my mind, is closer to lore in her thinking than Data ever would be. He would find a way that did not mean the end of the organic beings. Lore would not give a flying fuck. I do hope Soji wises up. I expect the Federation will arrive in the nick of time with Riker in command, and all's well that ends well. Oh, and Narissa and Narek will die quick, meaningless deaths, like get squashed by a rock or a bulkhead pylon or some such. You know, fun.
Kind of like a Lannister death.
Yeah, I would be fine with Narissa dying. I think Narek should survive and just wallow in his pain.
I think Narek should survive, too.
I like Narissa.
I do love Narissa.
Yeah, we do get more depth in her from her in later episodes, but for a while, she's just basically, again, mustache twirling one note villain for a while.
Yeah. I do want to see a freaking Federation armada pop up. I've said this before. I want to see Worf in command of the Enterprise. Happy to see Riker in command of the armada. Taking back over the Titan or something. I don't know. I just want to see all of that. I want to see it. And then I want some other huge surprise at the very end.
I mean, let's face it. Riker is going to be in charge or in command of the Titan. He already said in Nepenthe that he's off duty and would only come off for an important reason or a good enough reason. And to him, Picard will be a good enough reason. And Clancy will be there as well.
I'm pretty sure that Riker can be reactivated into service without his consent, but I don't think they would do that except for a situation like this. So it may be that he would be the one going to Clancy and saying, hey, I need to be there.
Okay. You saying, Liam, that Clancy's going to be calling the shots or whatever, cursing away. I have a prediction that we're going to get one more third and final F-bomb from Clancy in the final episode.
It'll be when Borg cubes come through a transwarp conduit and she'll just stare at the screen going, fuck.
Because now it's funny. Like, the second F-bomb, I laughed. And, you know, comedy comes in threes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like one more F-bomb from Clancy, please.
See, I know this isn't really an issue for you know, this episode, but I got no problem with the swearing whatsoever. Sometimes they don't seem to be that well written, like Picard's pissing off in this episode was a little bit delivered. Maybe it could have been done a little bit better, I guess. But some of them, like Clancy's ones, are perfect, you know?
Yeah.
I got no issue with it. And to someone's comment in the past that it wouldn't happen in a professional environment, it does.
Absolutely. All the time.
Yep. Doesn't make it professional, but it sure does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Christopher Query says, here is the problem with anything that threatens the Federation, regardless if the threat is from elsewhere or from within. We know that the Federation will have the ability to time travel, so everything will work out, unless time has been altered again. Hey, Voyager reset button style there.
I was thinking Daniels from Enterprise.
Crewman Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
And Laurie Damon Bowes says, I'm calling for a ban on time travel for any period longer than 20 years. We can say it damages subspace like warp drive was banned in that episode writers prefer to forget. Look, I reckon there will be time travel, but it will come from the synths because they've said they exist outside the barriers of time and space.
Hmm.
From the Uber synths?
From the Uber synths, from the Schwarzenegger synths.
Schwarzenegger's donkeys.
Because, Schwarzenegger's donkeys will come in season 10. I mean, episode 10. But no, so I think we'll get time-traveling Uber synths.
Hmm. I have mentioned this before, but I thought about the crystalline entity when I watched it.
Okay.
I honestly think it will be something we've not seen before.
I hope so.
And I feel like it's not going to be what anyone expects.
That's even better.
I hope so.
Karen Hasha says, and Narek returns. I don't get it. Agnes deactivated the tracker on the way to Nepenthe. Then they pick up Picard and Soji and start for DS-12. Commodore O probably knows about that, so it would have made sense for Narek to go there. But they change direction and go to the Borg conduit. How could Narek have extrapolated that they were going there and be waiting for them? That doesn't make sense to me. Is Picard going to end up in the Golem, or will the Borg somehow, quote, fix him? They're not bringing up Locutus again for no reason.
Oh, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think of that one.
Yeah.
As for Narek turning up, do you know what? They explained it away, but there is a hole in that because he did lose the tracker.
And I said this in the live show. I think that it's because he knows Soji. And he knows that she would want to go home. He knows that she knows that he knows where her home planet is.
Yeah.
Right. I'm with you.
And he also knows what the shortest way to get there before the Romulan fleet would be. And so he makes a calculated guess as to what the closest transwarp conduit would be to their last known location, and he waits there. It's a gamble, to be sure, but I think that he actually figured that out from just knowing Soji.
Yeah, me too.
And he'd know where the transwarp conduits would be from being on the artifact.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's answered Karen's question.
That's my personal headcanon, so you use it as you wish. Billy Wells Logue says, plenty of things to like about this episode, but also some very ridiculous things. Let's start with that slow camera pan of faces before they show the synth compound, a complete waste of time. Then we have space orchids that look beautiful but seem to only incapacitate ships and bring them down to the planet. That's gonna get messy quick. And then there's the synth mind meld that she what? Learned from a book? With no guide, no mentor, no teacher. And who has she tried this out on? Other synths only, and probably soon. And every time it's worked fine and she hasn't done any damage to anyone. Just sloppy. This is a bottom five episode.
This has got to be the least liked episode from the feedback, I think.
Mm.
But I'd like to point out one something that Billy Wells Loke has said, and that's the slow camera pan of the faces. I didn't appreciate that. We had it twice in this episode. One in the lighting up of the ship when it lost power, and then that panning across the faces before the compound. We didn't need it twice. I thought that was a bit strange.
I didn't notice it.
Didn't notice, didn't bug me.
It reminded me of some Walking Dead episodes where they just look at their faces in panic or despair or something, and it's like, oh, there's no point. You're just trying to fill up 44 minutes. So I agree with your comment there.
I never watched The Walking Dead.
I do watch The Walking Dead, but I'm several episodes behind. And for some reason, currently at this point in time, I just can't bring myself to continue watching or get caught up. You know, it just doesn't seem like the type of show I want to watch at this moment.
The space orchids do look beautiful, but and I have no problem with them.
Yeah, because again, they don't get a lot of foot traffic or ship traffic around this planet. Otherwise, what would the point be of having them there?
And I just think they're pretty.
It's hidden. It's not even a named planet.
Do you think that they might have some form of connection to the little flower thing in the Discovery credits?
They look very much like that flower.
Maybe not, you know. Joshua DeFries says, while there were lots of wonderful moments, this episode felt a bit scattered overall. I think it will coalesce in part two, but after the seamless flow of broken pieces, this episode introduces so many new characters and elements that it lost that flow for me.
And Brian Sherman says, this was my least favorite episode. As so many of you had said, it felt rushed and incomplete. This is one time maybe they should have put the two parts together, as it felt disjointed. That said, the artifact bursting through the transwarp conduit was awesome. So we've changed our last section from final thoughts to deeper thoughts, because everyone's getting all deeper in their comments and everything, and I really love what everybody's saying, so let's now move on to those.
Laurie Damon Bowe says, the poetry of organic beings, humans and Romulans, using manufactured weapons, such as phasers and torpedoes, countered with the synthetic beings using organic biological weapons, the orchids.
I didn't think about that, and I think that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I
hadn't really thought of that.
I thought it was beautiful, although I wouldn't say the orchids were organic, because they were synthetic.
Well, they're like both, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I don't think that organic orchids would cause your ship to lose power.
Okay, that's fair too.
Or probably be in space a very long.
Yeah, they need oxygen. They would need oxygen to live. So I'm going to go with the orchids were kind of synthetic.
Okay, fine, but they look organic.
But yeah, nice comment, Lauren.
Yes. Michael Merrick says, the producers more or less told us at the beginning of the season that Picard is an allegory. The producers more or less told us at the beginning of the season that Picard is an allegory for the isolationism we see in America and at many places around the world. A group of beings is banned, and the scripts cause us to agree with Picard that the ban was wrong. We have been thinking that millions of Romulans dying is the reason the ban is wrong, but this episode shows us the perspective of those who have been banned, a small, innocent group that has few defenses against the overwhelming power of the majority. This mirrors refugee bans in countries all over the world, and it is an allegory for how minorities are subject to discrimination, become radicalized. It will be very interesting to see the message that results from the storyline next week. I think that there will be a clear message against discrimination, which is very Star Trek.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's a nice comment.
I mean, it echoes things that we're doing in Australia, whereas if you come as a supposed illegal refugee, you get put on an island in the middle of the Indian Ocean.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Christmas Island.
The only thing that I'm confused about is I didn't think that millions of Romulans dying is the reason that the ban is wrong. I thought it was because, you know, it was a fear reaction. And it was about all the humans that were killed by the Sense, not Federation members that were killed by the Sense.
Hmm.
And also, you know, however many worlds, like 8 worlds, pitched a fit about helping the Romulans. And so they just found an easy out with that particular attack.
Yeah, that's true.
I am looking forward to seeing what O says about doing the attack on Mars and then banning the Synths, which effectively screwed up the Romulan rescue. Because let's face it, it did, because they lost the armada of ships that were going to rescue the Romulans off of Romulus.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of what the Jat Vash have actually done.
Yeah.
And our final comment for this episode, it's a little lengthy, but I really like it. It's from Chris Chaplin. He says, the spectacle of the firefight in orbit, the Borg cube tearing through the open transwarp conduit, the odd beauty of the space orchids, all of this merely supplements what seems to be the emerging primary theme of the show, how marginalized people, groups claim, reclaim, or secure their voice and autonomy. Picard represents the elderly and the ill who seek to reclaim their voice and autonomy in a world which might unknowingly strip them of these essential parts of personhood. The major figure of this is Admiral Clancy's dismissive, although understandable, treatment of Picard in Episode 2. After leaving Starfleet, he sinks into the margins of society, keeping busy by writing books of history as his only means of a voice he is sure few even care to hear. For many people, their work becomes part of their identity, and this is true for Girardi and Bruce. Both become marginalized after the ban. Both dealt with it differently, one by pursuing the work in the shadows, and the other quietly accepting her loss of voice. Obviously, Raffi and Rios lived on the margins after their experiences in Starfleet, prompting their respective mental health challenges. They never sought to reclaim their voices in society, but like Picard and the others, hid away and accepted their own private margin to squeeze their lives into. Then we have the XBs, Seven, and Hugh, all marginalized victims of the Borg and the mutilated face of the unwelcomed, the ugly impoverished, who even the most compassionate can't seem to look at directly. Hugh works to restore the XBs and quiet with the rules, while Seven has come to take a more active strategy. Hopefully, the XB's reclamation, not just of their bodies, but of their, quote, collective voice, is explored in depth next season. Finally, the Soongmatic synthetics on Capellius prefer direct confrontation, led by Sutra, of their oppressors, or in this case, their potential oppressors. Hopefully, a figure will emerge as a bridge who can join each of these marginalized people groups with the larger society. Might this be the XBs or the Golem which Girardi and Soong are finishing? Either way, this episode brings all of the plot threads together in a very satisfying setup to the finale. I love those ideas, Chris. I think that's really cool that you tied all of those characters and stories together.
I honestly can't say much to that. That's an amazing comment.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I think it stands on its own.
Yeah.
Anything I add won't do the comment justice. So
yeah, I think that's a great way to end the feedback for this week. Thank you all for your comments. Brandy, what'd you think of everybody's feedback for Et in Arcadia Ego Part 1?
Well, it seems like we had more of a disparity between the two. People either really enjoyed it or really didn't. There were some who enjoyed it but had problems. But I think probably this one had more negative reactions than past episodes. So, and you know, that's the thing. It's all opinion. It's all how we see particular things. And some may work for some people and some don't. And that's just the way that opinion works. It's not fact. It's just opinion. And it's how we all deal with things and how we all perceive things. So I think overall, it was probably more positive than negative. But there are a lot of people who are just waiting to see what is going to happen next, like all the rest of us.
Liam, any other thoughts?
Yeah, look, we just got to remember that this is episode 9 of a 10-episode season and part 1 of a 2-episode little subplot. So in that case, there are going to be mixed feelings towards an episode now because the setup for it is only taking place. It's not exactly finished yet. So it will be interesting to see what people think of episode 9 once episode 10 has aired.
Sure, yeah. A lot of the disappointment is that I think it's not the last episode, right?
Yes, the story's not finished yet, and that makes sense.
Like, this is like hashtag not the last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're almost there, you guys. We're almost there.
I don't want it to be over.
Yeah, but then, Brandy, when it's over, guess what we get to do?
Binge watch it?
Yes, binge watch it and then deal with Discovery.
Yeah, hopefully we're getting an announcement soon. And I, for one, cannot wait to hear more of the Edge Main Show with Liam, Brandy, and Nick and listen to Brandy's beautiful dulcet tones.
My dulcet tones, yes, they are.
And her
dulcet.
Wonderful voice. I think you guys are doing an incredible job with The Edge. I think it's really fun and smart, and you all have such differing thoughts and opinions. And I think it's really, I think you're really doing great with the show.
Well, thank you. No, that's very thanks, kind. Chris.
Yeah.
We try. We
do I don't
try.
Care what anybody else says.
We try not to either.
Yeah. Sometimes easier said than done, but...
Yeah.
You know, let your haters be your motivators, right?
Well, at the end of the day, it's not like they're going to stop us from doing this, so...
Right.
Just got to buckle in.
Don't listen if you don't like it.
Exactly.
Don't care.
Exactly.
Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Treks on the Line with Mike and Max.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we will collect your feedback for postcards.
You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line.
Okay, you guys, thank you so much for being here. I have been looking forward to podcasting with both of you at the same time. I know we ran a little long this time. It was just so fun.
It was very fun.
I've been excited for this since you told us we'd be coming on together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So excited.
Yes.
So thank you for having
me. And listeners, this is kind of what we do in our private chats and everything. We just have a really good time hanging out and talking. And I hope that you've all enjoyed this episode as much as we have recording it.
You won't get to hear some of the stuff that we've said.
Some things have been edited out.
Yeah. Some things had to be edited out for content and language.
Yeah. Brandy, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. You can find me lurking in the Babel Conference on Facebook. The Edge main show, as you have already mentioned, live from the Edge when that returns with new seasons with new episodes of Discovery. The Dark Corner podcast with my husband Dave and my solo podcast Headcanon, which you can find at darkcornerpodcast.com.
It's so good. I love Headcanon.
Oh, thank you. It's
me too.
It's very tangency because there is no one there to stop me from being tangenty. So
I don't know. I feel like I get it. I love
thank
it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Liam, where can we find you?
So you can also find me on the Edge main show. You can also find me lurking in the Babel Conference. And you can probably also find me on Twitter at Brandywine12 because we're pretty much the same person right now. I'm at LS74656 on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield and in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/TrekFM for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after the final episode of Star Trek Picard Season 1, Et in Arcadia Ego Part 2 drops. Hailing frequencies open.
Some synths like to get away, take a holiday from Capellius. Hop a ship to Arisa Beach or Argalius. But I'm taking a Borg cube on the transwarp conduit line. I'm in a new lore state of mind. I've seen every Starfleet crew on the Kyushu and the Enterprise. Been high on Mavona 4 with the entity crystalline. But I know what I'm needing. I don't want to waste more time. I'm in a new lost state of mind. It was so easy living day by day. got a touch with the humans and Daddy Sue. But now I need a little give and take. The Federation Times, the UFP News. It comes down to positrons and my old neurons back on Omicron. Don't care if it's only left them all behind. I'm in a new Lord state of mind. Oh yeah. Before. A little shout out to my brother Data. Gotta turn off that emotion chip. It was so easy living day by day, yeah. So out of touch with the humans and Daddy Sue. Now I need a little give and take. The Federation Times, the UFP News. Whoa, whoa. It comes down to positrons and those old neurons back on Omicron. I said I don't care if it's only left them all behind. I'm in a new Lord state of mind. I'm just taking a Borg cube on the transwarp conduit line. Cause I'm in a new lore state of